Blog Talk Radio.
Show on Blog Talk Radio. You're now tuned into the No Romance Without Finance show. My name is Brother Bernard Muhammad. I'm your host. Thank you for joining me. Peace and blessings to you all. And welcome to another episode of No Romance Without Finance. We got something good lined up for this Sunday evening, and I hope that you all can stick in there for the whole time because we have our special guest, David Finelis, who is going to be joining us all the way from Montreal, Quebec, in Canada. For those of you who didn't know, we had brothers and sisters up there. Yes, indeed. We are worldwide. We got the No Romance Without Finance family everywhere you can possibly imagine. So he's got something good lined up. But I want to take the first segment of the show, and I want to highlight something. We've had some very, very significant events take place over the last couple of weeks that I want to touch on, highlight, and definitely draw everybody's attention to. Namely, we've had the Holy Day of Atonement celebration of the Million Man March. The 18th anniversary of the Million Man March was commemorated in Tuskegee, Alabama. Of all places, Tuskegee, Alabama. You may ask why, but it turns out that Tuskegee, Alabama was the home of Booker T. Washington, as well as the home of Tuskegee University. And that's very significant because if you go back through Black history, you'll find some of the great, great great movements that took place in America can trace their roots back to that man, Booker T. Washington, the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey. When he first hit the shores of America, one of the first people that he wanted to meet was Booker T. Washington. He heard about the work and the philosophy that that man espoused and brought to light, and all the greatness that you see coming from, or that you see came from Marcus Garvey, finds its root in Booker T. Washington. So it's kind of like coming full circle that the celebration of the Million Man March, the day and the event that was based on atonement, reconciliation, and responsibility, would come back to the South, back to the Deep South, to Tuskegee, Alabama, and make another declaration that self-sufficiency, independence, sustainability, all the things that we need to do for ourselves individually and collectively as a people, as community, the kickoff for what we are calling Muhammad's economic blueprint, end poverty and want. It's very fitting that that would take place and be launched right from Tuskegee, Alabama. So we're going to get a little bit into the details of that. But it kicked off a conversation that's been going on over the past 3 weeks. Okay? Again, Muhammad's economic blueprint to end poverty and want. Over the last few weeks, I've been seeing events here and events there where, you know, grassroots organizers are getting together and tackling the issues that plague our community that fall under the categories of poverty and want. Okay, we have, I was just looking at a video of the Nation of Gods and Earths out in Milwaukee, I believe it was. They got together and they had a fun family day in the park. I don't know how many back-to-school packs they handed out and took care of the children, and everybody had a good time. You know, there was activity and fun to be had by family, all that you saw when you looked around, families, children, mothers, and fathers or responsible black men in the community doing what's necessary, providing needs and maintaining the well-being of all of the people who were there in attendance. They handed out backpacks. They had a big cookout. They fed everybody. It was safe. It was harmonious. It was community. That's a beautiful thing to see. But the thing that stood out in my mind is it takes money to do that. It takes money to do that. I was just reading in the current edition of the Final Call newspaper, and this is an actual, it's labeled as a special report. So normally, you know, the Final Call goes in volumes and numbers. Each issue has a volume number, and has a session number. This one is a special report, and right on the front page is a story, a headline story about how young girls, young black girls, are being forced into prostitution in cities around the country. They're being kidnapped, abused, and beaten, and forced into prostitution. What needs to be done to end this shameful and destructive tragedy? Again, this is a grassroots movement. You know, you don't hear about this on Nightline or your local news channel. Maybe you do locally if it's a really serious problem in the city that you live in. But for the most part, you know, Good Morning America isn't talking about this. Nightline News isn't talking about this, and I haven't heard it on 60 Minutes or 2020 yet. In addition to just not even getting the word out there about it, actually doing something about it to solve the problem. Grassroots are just people who see it, have it hit them in the heart, and they decide to get out there and do something about it. But what can be done about it? That's when the idea hit me again, the same thought that stood out in my mind with the Nation of Gods and Earths in Milwaukee and how they were doing something to feed and clothe and provide for the needs of their community. Same thing happens here. It takes money to do that. So that's the theme and the reason for this particular show today. Okay, economics equals black people, equals financial freedom, equals Nation of Islam, equals the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. all those things are synonymous with one another, okay? If you didn't see the correlation in all those things before, we're out to change your mind, because many of us used to think that black people equals scandal, equals the BET Awards, equals, you know, spend all the money that you have and don't invest, don't save. We used to draw those correlations. But the purpose of this show tonight is to re-change, is to change our thinking, get us to focus on the things that are important for us to focus on at this time, you know, really embody the time and what must be done, because time is getting short, and the more we let things go, the worse they seem to get. I mean, up until I saw this particular article in The Final Call, it didn't really occur to me there were young black girls in America, in cities around this country that we live in, that are being kidnapped, abused, and beaten, and forced into prostitution in 2013. Something is going wrong, and we have work to do. The previous issue of The Final Call had that on the cover. We have work to do. Now, again, keep in mind the whole idea and theme of the Nation of Islam initiates Muhammad's economic program to fight poverty and want. Deep South organizations and leaders meet in Tuskegee and pledge major effort to forge unity and progress. Now, we can spend quite a bit of time just talking about problems, talking about what's wrong, okay? And if you've ever heard Jesse Jackson, you know he can run down statistics, the number of black men in jail and versus school, and how much is spent on prisons versus the Head Start program, and we can spend a whole lot of time on that. As a matter of fact, we don't really have to spend a lot of time on that. We know what's wrong. We know issues of police brutality and injustice are happening all over America, and actually it's happening at an increasing rate. If you've been paying attention to black news, you know that there are so many cases where young black men are turning up dead under mysterious circumstances. We've had Trayvon Martin early in this year, and last year, as a matter of fact, and then this year, the story about Kendrick Johnson, also down south. This is in Georgia, but this is another brother that just turned up dead inexplicably, you know, beaten beyond recognition. And to make it so bad, when you would think that there's an autopsy and the medical examiner's report, and let's see what the cause of death really was, when they went back to go and do the examination on his body, they found the body stuffed with newspaper. All the internal organs were gone. His brain, his internal organs was harvested, and nobody seems to know what happened. No justice. How are we going to get justice? Guess what? You got to have lawyers and attorneys who are willing to put the time in to fight for that. Guess what? That costs money. Economics. Okay? Do what needs to be done if we don't have the fuel to put in the engine that's going to run our nation. Okay? So keep that in mind. Muhammad's economic blueprint for the individual, becoming an entrepreneur, becoming free financially of whoever it is that controls your finances now. We saw with the government shutdown and how many employed Americans, period, but how many black people who were employees of the federal government, once the government said, okay, we shut down, there were hundreds of thousands of employees who were all worried and up in arms because their source of income was cut off and they had no control over it. There were some who were prepared, some who were not prepared for it at all. That's a bad situation to be in. But Muhammad's economic blueprint is talking about a solution to that, an end to poverty and want. Guess what? If you one paycheck away from being in the gutter, feeling the pain and feeling the pinch, you're not too far away from poverty and want. So this includes you. Okay? So individually, there's a need for solutions to problems. But collectively, we look at our community, what's going on in our community, schools, public school systems not adequately educating our children. One of the things that the brother in the video from the Nation of Gods and Earths said was many of us, you know, had to go through the public school system. Many times people can't afford to homeschool. Many people don't have the time or the money to homeschool. Again, there it is blaring right there. You need money. You need to put a focus on economics and finances so that we can do the things that are going to be most beneficial for us, for our people, and for future generations. If you want to impact the world, you want to make the world a better place, you want to change something major about this world, you got to have finances. You got to have money to do it. So that's where Muhammad's economic blueprint comes in. For those of you who don't really know what Muhammad's economic blueprint is all about, it's an initiative that began with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad back in the 60s. If you've ever read the book Message to the Black Man in America, if you've never read it before, put that on your list. If you're not in the habit of reading, if you don't read any other book, I highly recommend you get that book, Message to the Black Man in North America. In that book, he talks about a particular section is named Muhammad's, and he suggests there that collectively, black people as a whole get together and start to pool our nickels, our dimes, and our quarters, and our dollars into a national treasury. You know, get together. Let's us organize ourselves and all sacrifice and put a little just pocket change into a pot that would turn around and work for the benefit of all of us. He talked about buying hundreds of millions of acres of farmland so that we can produce the food and the vital necessities that we spend money on every day. Imagine if the things that you bought, the things that you spend money on, the things that you just had to go out and purchase were actually manufactured and produced by people in your own family, people in your own community. Imagine what kind of power and generational wealth you could generate by keeping your spending power in the family, in the community. That's what Muhammad's economic blueprint is all about. On this show, in previous episodes of this show, I've talked about ethnic enclave economics. You know, you've heard about it before. You know what that is, Chinatown, Little Korea, Little Italy, places like that, ethnic enclaves, places where people of similar ethnicity get together and make it their part of town. That's where they all hold up. That's where they all congregate and dominate as the overall population. They make sure that everything in that area, that part of town, that place, is suited to their needs and their wants. So if there's a school in Chinatown, you can best believe that it's going to cater to the needs of young Chinese children. Okay? If there are law firms and advocacy groups, you can best believe they're going to advocate and cater to the needs of the people who are in that community. Well, there's nothing wrong with that, and there's no difference between other ethnicities and groups doing that and black people getting together and doing that. If we realize that, oh, our young men are targeted, our young men are getting caught up in a trap where they are running into police, and whether they're doing something wrong or even whether they're not doing something wrong, they're ending up getting put in jail, sent to trial, charged with crimes that in some instances they didn't commit because they're being forced to plead to something they shouldn't be forced to plead to, and they're ending up behind bars in prison. Or worse than that, they're ending up killed after an interaction with the police. Well, guess what? If we had an ethnic enclave where lawyers and attorneys and legal resources were readily available, then we could solve that problem in a heartbeat. If our young girls are unprotected, they're being kidnapped, beaten and abused and forced into prostitution in other cities, if we take groups like the peacekeepers, if we take groups like the Fruit of Islam from the Nation of Islam, if we take groups like the Nation of Gods and Earths that know that it's our responsibility as men to look out for our own children and women and families in our community, and we provide the economic funding to make that a reality, then that's a problem solved. We'll never have to worry about someone coming into our community and snatching one of our babies out of our community, only to find out later on that they've been sold and forced into prostitution somewhere. Remember that song by the Whisperers, Olivia? Olivia got distracted and lost her way. Now she's turned out a wolf in sheep's clothing or something like that, you know, picked her up and, you know, that's the stuff that happens. And you think that's an old song, an old occurrence, but it turns out that's happening right now in 2013. I'm reading the story right now about Compton, California, and how an 8-year-old girl, 8 years old, was picked up for soliciting her body on the street. We can solve that problem. We can stop that from happening. We can fix that. That was the purpose of Muhammad's economic blueprint. Where there's no jobs, where there's no opportunity for income, legal income, people turn to ways that have no basis, just the wrong path. When men can't find legal work, they turn to selling drugs. They turn to pimping women. They turn to doing things, robbing and killing and shooting people. They turn to that type of activity. But when we provide the opportunities for ourselves and for our people, we'll notice our communities change overnight. So that was the purpose in Minister Farrakhan resurrecting Muhammad's economic blueprint and launching this initiative, where we're all being asked to donate, to contribute, to painlessly take a nickel a day, 35 cents a week. I can't even think of anything you buy for 35 cents a week, unless you're talking about them old stale gumballs that cost 25 cents. But we're being asked to take 35 cents a week and put it into that pot, that national economic treasury that's for the benefit of black people all across America. According to the census, the latest census, there's over 16 million black people who are working, you know, working age black people, income earners, employed black people in America. 16 million. Minister Farrakhan did the math. He said if 16 million of us wage earners contribute that 5 cents a day into a national treasury, if we would all contribute, you know, like they ask you to contribute to the United Negro College Fund, and, you know, what difference has that made? Ask you to contribute to the political campaigns, what difference has that made? Ask you to contribute to this cause and that cause, but you're not getting to the root of the problem. If 16 million of us put just a nickel a day, 35 cents a week, into a national pot, a national pool, a national economic treasury, by the end of a year, by the end of 52 weeks, we would have $291 million some odd dollars. You know how much acres of land you can buy for that? You know how many cattle ranches you can buy for that? Do you know how much farmland you can buy for that? Industry. We can actually go into industry. It's been done before. In the 70s, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad cornered the fish industry, import of frozen whiting into America. The largest importer of whiting into America was the Nation of Islam in 1973 and 74. It can be done. Corner an industry. Begin to build an economic base for ourselves and for our people. It can be done. So that's all that the economic blueprint is about. And that's what is being asked of us. It can be painless. You won't even notice it. And if there's anything that's worthwhile, if there's anything that's worth given a shot to for the remainder of this year into next year. Give it a shot. Spread the word about it. Go visit the website, economicblueprint.org. Simple as that. Visit the website, check it out for yourself, and see what can be done if all of us pool our resources. Imagine the things that we can change. Imagine what we can actually help. You see our historically black colleges and universities that could actually put our youth on top of multiple industries. We can actually begin producing the true leaders of tomorrow instead of now, where most of the colleges and universities are turning out students that can do nothing more than hope they get a job. That's not what Booker T. Washington was talking about. He was talking about producing people who had specialized knowledge that can go into the world and make themselves valuable, make sure that what they had to offer was in demand by everybody, white, black, or whoever it was that they had to deal with. That's something that we should want for all of our children and the next generation. So that's what's being offered. Check that out, economicblueprint.org. Take a look at that and see exactly what it is and how you can participate in that. Because when I'm thinking about all these problems, when I'm thinking about what's wrong in our community and what needs to be fixed, what needs to be addressed, what needs to be handled by us, the responsible adults, the responsible men and women in the black community, it all leads to the same bottom line answer. There's no romance without finance. Unless we can get the economics and the finances straight, we're just going to continue to be mad victims, complaining about everything that happens to us, but not in a position to do anything about it. So that's my opening segment to this show, and we're going to make sure that as we get into the next segment, after we take this break, we're going to hear from a young man, as I said, from Montreal, Canada, who got the bug, who saw this, who happened to read that book, Message to the Black Man, and all the other books and, you know, lines of thinking that were talking this very same thing. And he actually took it and did something with it. And he's actually getting good results. So we're going to do a case study. We're going to take a look and see about what is it this brother saw in Message to the Black Man. What is it he saw that Elijah Muhammad was saying? And what motivated him, what inspired him to go and put this into practice, and what difference it's making and what difference we see that it can make if more and more of us get on board and start to do this. So we're going to take a break right now. We're going to take a little bit of a break, and we're going to come right back on the other side with our guest, David Fennelis. And don't go nowhere because we got more to go. Welcome back to the hottest show in Blog Talk Radio. This is the No Romance Without Finance show. I'm your host, Vernon Muhammad. For those of you who don't know and who didn't know, brothers and sisters from the Nation of Islam have gotten together, pooled their resources, and decided to work together to produce something that we all need, something that every one of us uses, or at least most of us use. And when we run out of it, we're going to continue to go someplace and buy more of it. What am I talking about? Freedom bathroom tissue. That's right. The brothers and sisters of Freedom Paper Company, LLC, have gotten together and are now manufacturing bathroom tissue, and they are the major distributors of paper towels, trash bags, cleaning supplies. They're a full janitorial and sanitation supply company. So whether you're talking residential and what you normally use routinely in your home, antibacterial liquid, hand soap, and paper towels, or whether you're talking commercial for your child's school or daycare or your church or your mosque, they produce, they're also distributors of cleaning supplies, disinfectant, anything that you possibly could run out to the big box stores and buy, you can actually purchase from within your own community now. So visit the website, www.freedompapercompany.com, and see what the catalog has in store for you. If you run a food service program, they have what you need. If you clean facility, they have what you need. If you have an office that uses copy paper or file folders, legal pad, they have what you need. And in most cases, it is cheaper than the major retailers across America. Talking Target, Office Depot, Staples, Costco, Sam's, wherever you go, you can find what you need cheaper and, in many cases, better quality than where you're already spending your money. So let's practice this cooperative economics that we're talking about. Let's get in line with the economic blueprint that says if we want to improve our future, we've got to start spending money with our own, within our community, and supporting black businesses. So Freedom Paper Company, freedompapercompany.com. Check it out and make sure that you buy Freedom Bathroom Tissue. All right, so let's get into the next segment. I'm excited about our guest that's going to be coming on with us. I just opened up the mic. Brother David, is that you?
Brother Vernon, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you just fine. Peace and blessings to you, brother. Welcome to the No Romance Without Finance show.
Thank you for having me on. I'm very, I'm very happy that we have a show like this and that black individuals can come in and discuss about topics that really matter to us. So this is very important.
No doubt, no doubt. You know, this is this, what you just said reminded me growing up. You know, I grew up in the 70s, so I'm used to show. I remember back in the day they had Tony Brown's Journal, and there was actually a show called Like It Is, and another show I remember called Positively Black. You know, stuff like that was everywhere that you can imagine. You know, it's just what we talked about and what we did and what we were about. That's a far cry from today when, you know, people idolize shows like Scandal and, you know, the Real Housewives, what is it, Real House Husbands of Hollywood, all of the stuff that's on that we that is kept in front of us, it's got us going nowhere. So I felt an obligation to make sure that something like this was out. And I'm glad that I can have somebody like you on my show. So, oh, I hear some fax beeps. Are you there, brother? Brother David, are you there? Oh, I think I lost him. Hopefully he'll call back in, and we'll get him back on the show. I see his line has dropped. So we'll give him a couple minutes to come back in. But let me tell you what I've learned about him. I've only just recently been introduced to the brother. So I want to make sure that I introduce him right and make sure that we lead in properly. Hold on, I think he's back. Brother David, is that you?
Hey, yeah, I'm back. I don't know what happened there, but I'm back.
All right, I started hearing some fact beats a little while ago. Disappeared, but I got you back now. So,
do this, brother. Tell us a little bit about yourself, because I was just telling the audience that I was only recently introduced to you, but the way that I was introduced to you, you know, I was very impressed. You know, someone who just happened to find the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and saw the correlation between what he was saying in business and entrepreneurship. So how did that connection come about?
Well, that's exactly right. I'll tell you from the beginning. Last year, last August in 2012, I just started thinking about my life, my future, and I just noticed that. Am I still on?
Yeah, you're still on. Go ahead.
Okay, I just noticed that black people around me and in other parts of North America were all in the same condition. We were all just going through the motion. You know, we don't own anything. And everybody just seemed to be just sad, right? Because their future didn't look bright. So for myself, I just started paying attention more to politics, people in government. And I didn't understand why, they just got away with, murder every single time. So I wanted to do some research. So I did some research. I started talking to my girlfriend's cousin, who's in who's a member of the Nation of Islam here in Montreal. We have a study group here in Montreal. I don't know if you were aware of that. Did you know that?
I knew that. I think I know of a couple of people who are in the study group in Montreal. But yeah,
right.
People realize that the Nation of Islam is actually active in many countries.
Exactly. So I'm sitting here in Montreal, and I'm thinking about these things, and my girlfriend's cousin, I remember that she gave me a book called Message to the Black Man. She gave me this book in 2005.
Now, wait, hold on. How old were you then? How old were you in 2005?
In 2005 or 2013 now, so 8 years, so I was 30.
Okay.
All right. But every time I got to the first page, the first chapter, I would read like one or two pages, and then I would just put it down. I would just put it down. You know, I didn't have time for it, or I wasn't ready for it. But anyway,
all right.
Now it's 2012, and I'm actually thinking about my future and why black people are in the condition that they are in. And, I just started reading the book a bit. And then I called my cousin, my girlfriend's cousin, and I told her that I wanted to come and, join the study group. And then the brothers were just talking about how, how we got to this point, slavery and the Willie Lynch story, just explain, opening my eyes to the importance of understanding the past, to knowing the past to understand your present. So I understood that, and it started making sense. So I sat down. I started reading the books. I read Message to the Black Man. I read Our Savior Has Arrived. I read The Fall of America, Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews. I'm currently reading The Relationship Between Blacks and Jews, Volume 2 right now. And
wow.
All of that, yeah, I just really went deep into it because it was the time. I felt it was time. I needed a change. I currently have 3 kids right now. So I just realized that if I continue going on the path that I'm going right now, I'm not doing anything that's going to change their future.
Okay.
So I realized that. So
you got some serious motivation then, huh?
Exactly. So what happened was Elijah Muhammad, in his books, he explains and he teaches us who we are and who our enemies are. And I think that's very important. That is very important to know as black people, that we have to know who we are. We have to know who we are so that we can understand how to move accordingly, as black people.
Okay.
And understanding and knowing who our enemies are, will help us. We have to use that knowledge so that we can, maneuver against all the systems that they put, to keep us trapped.
Mm.
So I feel like when we know this knowledge, we have to use that knowledge to our advantage. And I just feel that unity will solve 95% of our problems. And Elijah Muhammad teaches that. And when you do a careful study of history, you will notice that the Europeans or the people in power right now, there's no way that they would be able to do the things that they do right now if they were not unified.
That's interesting that you say that. You know, I remind people frequently that, you know, the world is made up of good guys and bad guys. You know, to put it in the lightest terms I possibly can, you know, good guys and bad guys. Every day,
right,
both of them get up, you know, both of them wipe the crust out of their eyes and brush their teeth and wash up and put their pants on one leg at a time. And the only difference is one group goes out and they, you know, try to make the world a better place, and the other group goes out and they try to raise as much hell on earth as they possibly can. But other than that, there's no difference except for the fact that, just like you said, the bad guys seem to have incredible unity.
They have tremendous unity. And we don't. That's the only thing. We don't have that. Now, understanding this, you know, I'm learning all of this. All of this is happening in 1 year, last August. Now we're November,
okay.
August 2012, November 2013. So what I did was, after reading these books by Elijah Muhammad, I started gaining a lot of confidence in myself. I started walking, you know, with a lot of more self-respect for myself as a black person, as a black individual.
Okay.
And I realized that no one can stop me from doing whatever what I put my mind to. Nothing at all. Especially after, you know, reading these books by Elijah Muhammad, because he's helping me understand that we are the original man. You know, that's huge.
You know, when I'm listening to you, and it's interesting because, you know, over the past couple of years, I've seen so many raids and, you know, crazes come out. You know, a couple of years ago, everybody was all on Secret. You know, oh, we got to get the book The Secret and see the movie, and, oh, we can do amazing things. And I remember either the year before that or the year after that, Oprah Winfrey was out, and she was doing this online course with I can't remember this, Eckhart Tolle, I think that was his name, Eckhart Tolle. And it was all such groundbreaking. Ooh, you can do amazing things, and inside you is great power that can bend the universe. But this isn't new stuff. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad revealed this information and this knowledge specifically to black people way decades ago. That book that you're talking about, Message to the Black Man, came out in 1965, I believe it was, 63 or 65. So something like that is 65. So significant, and so significant that it was right in the midst of us, right in our hand. So we've had this that you got from it all along, understanding who we really are and what we're really capable of. I think that's a significant point. I just wanted to reflect on that because you just said it. And
I think about that all the time, because I always sit down with my girlfriend and I always say, if only I had paid attention to the Nation of Islam and Farrakhan 20 years ago, after knowing what I know now, I just keep thinking about, you know, how my life would be different if I cared. That's the thing. You have to understand, you know, The way my parents raised us, we live in Montreal. We don't live in the United States of America. So it's, you know, day to day life with Europeans in the United States and Montreal. I'm just gonna talk about Montreal. It's different, right?
Right.
So
what's the different about it?
Well, we're not really. You're not going to see that much. I can go out and get a job if I want to. There's not that much racial discrimination. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Right, gotcha.
Like a black person in Montreal cannot say, I can't find a job because I'm black.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying? But I do know that I have friends that live in the United States, like Detroit, Arkansas, and they tell me that. They tell me that they can't find a job because they're black, right? And at times I say, nah, it can't be, right? But I always have to remember that, you know, our realities are not the same. But we are black, though. You know, we are. I understand that we are black, but in Montreal, because I know people that come to Montreal all the time, like friends from the United States that come to Montreal all the time, and they always say how it's so much different. You know what I mean? Mm. So the point I was trying to make was that our parents, they taught us to like everybody. You know, they just taught us to like everybody. But Elijah Muhammad, and there's nothing wrong with liking everybody, but Elijah Muhammad explains that because of the condition that we are in, we need to love ourselves first.
Mm-hmm.
We have to love ourselves first before we can love anybody. You can't love, why is somebody going to love us if they see us disrespecting our brothers and sisters? When I read that and I understand that, it makes so much sense.
That's something a lot of people miss that point right there. You know,
yeah,
you can't
really do
or be respected by other people until you have that respect for yourself.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm. That's why you see, even here in Montreal, all the other nations they're united. You come to Montreal, you're going to see Italian banks, Armenian banks, you know, but you don't see any African banks, Haitian banks, Jamaican banks, Trinidadian banks. You don't see any of that.
Wow.
Yeah, you don't see that. Everything that Elijah Muhammad says in his book is true. And there's proof of what he says.
Technically, you're not like a member, a registered member of the Nation of Islam, right? So this is just you checking it out and seeing what makes sense and what doesn't make sense, right?
Exactly. I go there because I know that the brothers and sisters that are there are individuals that understand the importance of history and they want a change for black people. They want to see black people be better. So I like to be around people like that.
Nothing wrong with that. I was going to ask you, so what needs to change for black people in Montreal? But, you know, I think you just said it. You know, what's wrong with wanting things to be better? Things can always be better. That'd be a problem.
I just want to be clear. We are not united in Montreal. Black people are not united in Montreal. Is the day-to-day life to live in Montreal is better, you know, but we're not united. We still don't understand the importance of, you know, buying within the black community, you know. Mm-hmm. They just don't understand how important that is.
Mm-hmm.
So we still – that's why I say that even though our realities are not the same, we're still black.
Right.
A European or any other nation, when they see us, they're just going to see a black person.
And some of the same problems that plague us as a people, not necessarily the, you know, what's done to us, but just some of the ways in which we're limited or the ways in which we limit ourselves, some of those are really still the same.
Exactly. Exactly, right? And that's what I mean. That's why I'm saying that Elijah Muhammad, every black person. I always tell this to black individuals that I meet. Every black person needs to read this book. I give away this book. I buy copies of this book.
Mm-hmm.
I go on my Facebook page, and I just type in. My comment is whoever responds to this post first, I will send them a copy of the message to the black man. I've been doing that.
in August of 2012, because
wow.
I think that because I practice what I preach, and I feel that this book has done a lot for me in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel that I know that if another black individual has this book, even if that person doesn't read the book, doesn't want to read the book right away, but as long as he has this book in his home or her home, one day they will pick up that book. Something in their life is going to make them want to read this book.
Hmm.
You know what
you
I mean?
Can only,
so,
you can study to run from it for so long.
Yes, yes. Now, Elijah Muhammad has given me the confidence and the knowledge to go out and start my own business.
Hmm. Yeah, you mentioned about gaining self-respect and confidence. So what is that? How did that look when that finally kicked in? What did you actually go and do with that?
Exactly. Well, what I just started thinking about, because he teaches that we have to have our own business. So I just started thinking about what I enjoy doing and what black people need. How can I help the black community? That's what I was thinking about. Because I know a lot of black individuals that are awakened or on the dawn of being awakened that always say things like, well, I want to support black business, but, you know, there's no black owners that do this and do that. You know, so I just started thinking about that, paying attention. And I just went out and started my own business in the health and wellness industry.
Wow, okay. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the thing is, Elijah Muhammad has a book called How to Eat to Live.
Okay.
You know, how it's important to eat the right nutrients to prolong our lives. And I'm a person that's, since 1999, I've been exercising 5 days a week, and I thought I was eating properly. I was eating six times a day.
Wow, okay.
So I'm a person that understands the importance of exercising and eating right. So
okay.
I read this book, How to Eat to Live.
Apparently you were sticking to a system. You were disciplined enough to whatever that system was back then, you were sticking to it.
Yes, that's the thing about me. That's why I'm telling you, I'm living proof that when you make up your mind to do something, nothing can stop you.
Wow.
I'm living proof of that. In 1999, I made the decision that I wanted to be as cut up as any Hollywood actor, like the six-pack, everything.
Right.
I went out and I bought a book. I just followed the book to the letter. And then 30 days later, 30 days, because the book says 45 days to transform your body, you lose 20 pounds in 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
I lost 20 pounds in 30 days. I know for a fact that if you put your mind into doing something, you will do it and nothing will stop you.
So now I'm reading
these books by Elijah Muhammad, and that's exactly what he's telling us. He's telling us that there is no reason for us to be in the condition that we are in right now.
Hmm.
We have been tricked. If you just come together and you understand that you've been tricked, we can change our condition overnight. He explained that.
Doesn't that sound like such a simple thing? If we just come together, work together, a little bit of unity will solve a whole lot of problems.
Yes, it's simple. It's simple. For some reason, a lot of people don't get it, or they just—it's either they don't get it, or they're successful. They're successful under this system, and they don't even want to pay attention to the truth.
That's what I see with a lot of people. I make it a point, if no more than once in any given week, I have to go out and I have to make it my business to do my part to distribute the Final Call newspaper. You know, sometimes I get multiple days per weekend. You know, I run a business, I'm an employee, you know, I do a bunch of different things. Well, but I make time to try to get this message out there into the hands of the people. And it's interesting, one of the, I would say, the number one response or a category of responses that I get, you know, I'm saying, hey, would you like to help stop, you know, child prostitution, since that's on the cover of this particular issue? Would you like to stop, you know, domestic violence, or would you like to do something to help educate black youth around America? The number one response that I get is, you know, I'm fine, or, you know, I'm good, you know, no thanks. And it boggles my mind how the things that you're saying, you know, we can see these problems clear as day. You know, there's violence in the schools, you know, of course our communities, you know, aren't as safe as they could be. I don't know what the scenario is with how the run-in that black people have with police officers up there, but down here it's a serious problem. When black youth interact with police, something bad definitely comes out of that, whether they were in the wrong or not. So, you know, to see that there's problems like this that exist, and we're confronting people with the problems, and they say, no, I'm all right, you know, I'm good. It's like the night of the living dead, it's just walking zombie.
Yes, it's very frustrating. It's very hard for me to watch that. You know, when you know that you have a knowledge that can help people, and they just choose to not even take a look at it. It is frustrating. It is frustrating at times. Like, so frustrating that it makes you really sad. Like, you're wondering to yourself. I think about, because right, in 2013, Minister Farrakhan is 80 years old right now.
Right.
He's 80 years old, right?
Right.
And I went back and I started watching videos of Minister Farrakhan, you know, when he was in his 40s, when he was much younger, and the fire, right, the passion in his eyes, the fire and the passion in his eyes, you know, because he was a lot younger. When you're young, you know, you think that you can't be stopped, and I just saw all that passion, and I was thinking to myself, this man right here, he thought he was gonna come and give us the truth, and we were all going to, you know, follow it. Like that's the way I see Farrakhan, right? Because
right.
I just think about everything that he's done for black people, and how many of us, including myself, never paid attention.
Wow.
We just didn't pay attention. And I'm really, like, I understand that everything happens for a reason, but I really beat myself up for that sometimes. So and he's at a higher level. He's dedicated his whole life to this.
You know? Right.
And me, just the last 12 months, and I'm seeing at a lower level just how it bothers me, it frustrates me. How you have something that can help your brothers and sisters get out of the condition that they are in, that they're always complaining about.
Right.
They're always complaining. Our people always are good to complain. And then our thing is that when we are provided with the solution, then, you know, all the excuses come out of why we can't get together and just fix our problems ourselves.
You know, he's on Twitter and Facebook all the time. He's, you know, answering live questions that people ask him. He tries to get to every question that people ask him, you know, if it's worthy of a response. But people have asked him, you know, how do you stick in there for as long as you have? You know, he's been doing this over 57 years now, if you count exactly when he came into the Nation of Islam, 1955. He's been doing this for a long time, longer than some of us have been alive. You know, he's been an adult working in this cause. So to think that, you know, 5 decades, going on 60 years of doing this type of work, you know, how do you not get discouraged? How do you not get frustrated and depressed and whatever? And what I can remember of his answers is that he just believes in it so much. You know, he knows and understands that ultimately in our destiny, you know, if you add up the sum total of everything that black people in the Americas have shown in terms of that spirit to overcome, to accomplish, to do. You know, you take Marcus Garvey, you take Fannie Lou Hamer and Harriet Tubman and Carter G. Woods and all of those people, Booker T. Washington, you take all of those people and just look how over time we just driving and pushing towards an ultimate goal, and that goal is overcome, overcome, overcome. You got to have the faith that that's going to be and that ultimately we will achieve that victory. You got to have love in your heart for the people. You got to be willing. I've heard the saying before, you got to love your people more than they hate themselves. When your love for your people is stronger than their hate for themselves, then you have the adequate fuel and the adequate armor to do what's necessary. You know, because you read it in Message to the Black Man when they describe us, you know, black people in North America. They say stiff-necked, hard-hearted, and rebellious, hard to lead in the right direction, but easily led in the wrong direction. That's just us. You know, that's the situation. That's where we are. So understanding that and seeing that, now you got inspired to go and create your own business, to do your own thing, and to show that you can be successful in a venture like this and as an entrepreneur. Even though this just the bug just hit you, what, last year, 2012? So how has business been going for you? How you know, what have you been able to accomplish with the business?
Well, I'm in the business industry where I sell 100% chemical free organic products.
Okay.
Personal and whole care products. So that goes you know, hand in hand with, you know, how to eat to live.
Right.
Okay. So
that's a lifestyle.
Yeah. So what it is that a lot of the products, home and personal care products that we purchase at the local stores are full of chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So I associate myself with a company called Estante Organics. And whoever's listening, you can go to my website, www.EstanteOrganics.com/David P. That's www.EstanteOrganics.com/DAVIDP. And you can go see what that's about. You can look at the products and how you can get started with me. But just to get back to what I was saying, so I decided that I was going to associate myself with this company so that I can purchase, I can take care of my family first, you know. I can buy our organic, chemical-free organic products at a wholesale price.
Right.
So that we stop using chemical products, okay?
Okay.
So that's one.
Okay.
Now, the other thing is that we're detaching ourselves from the system at the same time. Because we're not going to go shop at the local stores for any products that I can purchase at my web store. So I'm talking about shampoos, toothpaste, hair conditioner, skin lotion, lip balm, you know, and nutritional supplements. You can go to the website and see all the products. But all of these products are products that I can purchase at my store. So now, you know, the people in my organization, because I enrolled a lot of people, mm-hmm. and so the people in my organization, what I did was I enrolled them and I set them up with their own web store as well.
Okay.
So that they can live chemical-free as well. So everybody that's in my organization is no longer buying chemical products from the local stores. So what that means is that all those stores that were getting, you know, between, I don't know, $100 to $200 to $300 a month from these black individuals, now these black individuals are buying at their store. They're buying at their store, so they're, that's money that they're losing. So they're detaching themselves from the system. That's one.
That's amazing. You know, just today, this is, hearing you say this blows my mind, because just today, I mean, it hurt me to my heart to see people who talk this stuff that we're talking about. We need unity. We need to work together. We need to, you know, stop going and putting fuel into the tanks of, you know, our enemies and people who really don't have our best interest at heart. And we need to start, you know, looking out and doing it for ourselves. But, you know, the basic things that they needed, that were right there. They could have just bought it from their brother or bought it from their sister, you know, bought it from who was right there. Instead of doing that, the same people just ran out and, you know, went to the store across the street. I'm like, how do you do that? How do you talk this stuff that you talk and go right back to the, like you said, to the stores and buy the crap that, you know, none of that money is staying in our community.
Exactly. Exactly.
It
is mind-boggling. That's one of the frustrating things that I'm learning how to deal with. I'm learning how to deal with that every single day. And reading these books, Lessons for the Black Man, The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews. The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews, Volume 2, actually tells us who got the 40 acres and the mule.
Mm-hmm.
You know, black people didn't get it. But
right.
This book actually explains to us that the European Jews are the ones that got our 40 acres in the mule. So you have to read that book. I'm not going to get into it, but when you're like myself, when an individual reads all of this, you know, this is all information that we use to our advantage. This is all information that we use to our advantage because we understand from the root how these people moved, what their actions were to get us in this condition, how they got to the privileged position that they are in today, why they are in the privileged position that they are in today, because of what happened in the past, right?
Right, the haves and the have-nots. How did we end up not having and somebody else got it?
Exactly.
What's the ours?
Yeah. So that book, those two books, explains why we're in the conditions that we're in detail.
Wow. The
in
Secret
detail.
Relationship Between Blacks and Jews, Volume 1 and Volume 2. For those of you who are listening, put it on the list. Now you mentioned that book. Did you read anything in that book that you would say is anti-Semitic?
No way. It's the truth. Look, I don't mess around with Jewish people, like European Jews. I really don't. Yeah, before last year, I didn't really care, but now I don't play their little games. I just don't play their little games. In these two books, it's actually you know, Jewish scholars and historians. Mm-hmm. They're the ones who documented all these facts. So, you know, they just have to go back, and if they want to say anything, they have to talk about their peoples. So I just don't play around with them. If I have a Jewish person in my face, you know, I just have this book. And I've done this. I'm telling you right now, I walk around with these books. I read them everywhere I go. I walk around with Message to the Black Man. It's always on my backpack. And right now I'm reading Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews, Volume 2. That's with me. So if anytime somebody wants to open their mouth and say anything, say, oh, he's racist, it's a black cult, this and that. No, it's just the truth. You can either handle it or you can't handle it. You know, the way I see it is that if you're a white person and, you know, I'm telling you this and you want to come back and not deal with the truth and just, you know, say, you know, let's get over it, get over it, you know, I just keep doing what I'm doing. I'm not even worried about them. A black person that says that, you know, I just label them Negro pedants and keep it moving.
Negro peons.
We have a lot of Negro peons.
Yeah, that's a universal phenomenon.
Oh yeah. It's mad crazy, the Negro peons, and because here you are trying to help them, and they're doing everything in their power to undermine you. You know, so you can't mess around. So the Negro peons, they've already made up their mind with the action. You know. We know how they move, so we don't really have to worry about them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so with these books, you know, I move accordingly. I know exactly what I need to do to help myself get financially free, my peoples, and eventually. Because what I'm doing with this right now is that everything that I do is based on the teachings of Elijah Muhammad. So when I speak to people, anyone that wants to work with me, they have to understand that the main goal, the reason that we're doing this is so that we clean up, we do our part to clean up the black community.
Mm.
We go out, we create some wealth for ourselves, and so that we can pull our resources together and go start building businesses.
Right. You got to have so that you can pull them together. Otherwise,
exactly.
You're just talking about it.
But that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. We need, in order for us to, like, really make a difference, we need money. We need money, and not just a little bit of money. We need to create wealth.
Right.
We need to be in the $1 billion range, but there's a difference. We need to be in the $1 billion range with the right mindset.
Right.
Because we have a lot of wealthy black individuals in North America, but their mind is not right.
That's true. Look at all the athletes and people. You know, it struck me as funny. Because you know, in America, all of the athletes, they soon after they, you know, make it big and get into the big leagues, they start these private charitable foundations. You know, they got the Jerome Bettis Foundation and the RG3 Foundation. You know, they name it after themselves. It's a private family foundation. Really, it's just another way to, you know, for them to save their own money. You know, kind of like Bill and Melinda Gates. You know, they started the Gates Foundation, Bill Gates Foundation. It's just, you know, their right pocket and their left pocket. You know, they can donate money from their business into their own personal charitable foundation and not have to pay taxes on it. So, but it interested me that, you know, these people, they can start their own charitable foundation for anything that they want, you know, and every one of them just starts a football camp or a basketball camp. Like, how come nobody ever starts an entrepreneurial camp, you know, or a science and technology camp, or, you know, a groom the next generation of black lawyers camp, you know? Nothing like that. Nothing that's going to be significant. Nothing that's going to make a difference to really improve the standing and the situation for you know, for black people across America. You know, do we really need another football camp, another basketball camp? You know, give us something that's worthwhile and useful, something that you can know that I can let these through this camp go, and they're going to be fine individuals. They're going to be all right in life, and they're not going to succumb to the problems that, you know, we know are present and prevalent in our society. That's just another thing. I know exactly what you're talking about. We got a lot of high-paid individuals that ain't worth a damn, for lack of a better term.
You got that right. It's okay though. It's very disappointing. But that's there for a reason. You know, it's showing us what not to do when we get our money. You know what I mean? Like, this is exactly what we are not supposed to do. So we need that. What we need is that, you know, individuals, black individuals with money that have the right mindset.
Mm-hmm.
So what I like about my business and the people that I work with is that I look for like-minded individuals. And all these individuals, the individuals that I'm working with, I have an organization with over 35 people right now, and it's growing. It's growing each and every week. And we all have the same mindset. Like, every single one of us, we're in there so that we can help the black community.
Wow. Is your organization all in Montreal, or?
No, because, you know, it's an online business.
Got you.
It's an online business. So you can, and it's actually a home-based business. I can connect with anyone.
I hope that the listeners can you know, retain and remember and connect with. You know, these are the ingredients that we're going to need to add to the mix, so that when we start making the moves that we need to make, put ourselves in a better position, we can be successful with that. These are the key components, because we're getting down to the last 15 minutes, and we actually have another caller that just came online that apparently has their hand raised and they want to join in the discussion. So it looks like it's a Skype caller. Caller, all I see is 11111. So your microphone is open. Welcome to the No Romance Without Finance.
All right.
Hello, caller. All right, I just opened up their microphone, but they're not saying anything. If you're on Skype, your line is open. If you have a comment you want to make, I see you press 1. Tell us your name and tell us what you have to say. All right, well, maybe not. I'll put their microphone back on mute. And David, we got we got about 12 minutes or so left, so why don't we make it plain where people can reach you and your business and how they can find out more about what you're talking about, where they can connect with you also.
All right. If you want to connect with me, you can connect with me on Facebook. Just add me, David Finellis. That's my name, David Finellis. And my website, again, I will give you my website.
Spell your last name so they know. Yeah.
All right. So Finellis is spelled F as in Frank, E N E L U S. I'll spell it again. F as in Frank, E N E L U S. Finellis.
All right.
Okay. And you can go to my website, www.asanteorganics.com/David P. Or you can reach me by email, davidpfinellis@gmail.com.
Okay. And you'll put a link, if they can get to you on Facebook, you'll put a link on your page to Asante Organics, right?
Yes. Yes. They can just inbox me. They can inbox me, but I will be back. I will be back. We can talk all the time. Don't worry about that.
Well, hey, man, I want to thank you for coming on and giving me some of your time. This is the kind of activity and conversation that I love having, man. So anytime you want to come back, new developments or new topics, let me know, man. I'd be glad to have you on again, all right?
All right. I want to just let you know that I'm very proud of you. We need more shows like what you're doing right now. We need to have conversations about important topics, not just sports and music and movies. You know, we need to talk about what's really important and how we can make a difference for our children and our future. So, you know, I just want to thank you for having me on the show. And I wish you well.
No,
I wish you nothing but the best.
Thank you so much, man. Thank you so much. God willing, you know, maybe we'll get a chance to actually bump into one another and actually see one another face to face. I know that Savior's Day is coming up in February. And, you know, I'm not sure if it's going to be Chicago, Detroit, or where it's going to be, but, you know, that's when everybody in the Nation of Islam goes and gets together. That's like it's like our Christmas. So, you know, opportunity, put the last weekend in February on your calendar. Maybe we'll get a chance to meet one another there.
All right. That sounds like a plan to me.
All right. Well, that is it. That is the end of this episode of No Romance Without Finance. Again, I'm your host, Vernon Muhammad. Thank you all for joining and tuning in, and make sure that when you get an opportunity, you share the link to this show. Let other people know what you heard about No Romance Without Finance. So that's it. Peace and blessings to you. We'll be right back.
Never make it stop now. Never listen to the one them who are said that I can't.